The following is a seminar conducted by John Bowker and Fred Vobey during the 1991 National Radio Club Convention. The seminar is entitled Loop Antennas. The seminar was conducted on August 31, 1991. John Bowker starts off with information concerning passive loop antennas, and Fred Vobey concludes with active loop antennas.
Well, fine. We'd like to talk a little bit about loop antennas. And this is going to be a two-part talk. The first part will be on passive loop antennas, and the other will be on active loop antennas. And Fred Vobey is going to join me here in a few minutes. He's going to talk about the active antennas. I'll talk about the passive ones first. This morning, we both got here about 9 o'clock, and we were setting up various loop antennas and trying them on various radios, and coming up with, as usual, rather unpredictable results. The only thing we could predict accurately was that the Holiday Inn here, which is doing a fine job for this convention and providing us with all kinds of space, is full of noise.
Yes.
Electronic noise. So that our loops alternately select and amplify noise as well as radio stations. We went up and down the dial, and somebody suggested that we try 1260. And 1260 AM turned out to be an interesting frequency for us, so I've got my stuff tuned pretty much to 1260, Fred. I expect you probably do, too. What we want to show is the operation of this kind of a device that maybe you've all seen. It's called a select antenna. It runs for about $40. When I bought this, it was $29, and it keeps going up about $5 a year for some reason. We'll demonstrate that, and then I'll show you actually what it works, how it works. And then Bill Swiger generously brought in this 4-foot antenna, loop antenna, which is a passive antenna, and we'll show you a couple of things about this. And you may be sitting there expecting us to show you some wondrous things, and if we do, it'll surprise us as much as you. Because every time we tried something during the day, we found that there was a floor spreader, or whatever you call these cleaners out here, probably up on the second floor, and it was affecting us as much as anything else. But that's part of the fun of all of this. In addition to that, we have two of the digital readout radios. This is the realistic version. Martin, what happened to you? What happened to yours? Is yours?
I brought mine back.
Okay. You have the more generic Sengen
right.
brand, but they look the same. Same radio. This is on sale for $199, except I noticed that Radio Shack marked it down about $50 here in the last couple of weeks. Fred brought in his Sony ICF 2010, so we may be able to compare a little bit between these radios. And, a few other things, too, as we get to it. I have one of my radios I carry with me, which is a very, $29.95 Sony with a built-in cassette. And it's interesting to see how these different radios behave on the loops in different ways. Let's start with the simplest of the antennas and just momentarily discuss the purpose of a loop. The loop antenna purpose is to simply increase the capture ratio of the radio so you get stronger radio signals and they come in louder and presumably clearer. That's one purpose. Another purpose may or may not be to give you selectivity on directions, so that if you have two stations on the dial and you want to hear one and not the other, you do something with the loop and you eliminate one and pick up the other one clearly, and vice versa. So if we start with a select antenna, it's been my experience with this device that it serves the first purpose quite admirably. It will boost a weak signal remarkably, as much as 40 dB, which is a lot, 10,000 times. As far as eliminating two stations that may be in slightly different directions or something like that, I've had no success at all with a select antenna. Now, you have to understand, I live in a motor home. It has all metal framing, very much like the Holiday Inn. And we have a radio in the back that I like to turn on in the morning. And we're, one day we're in Hershey, Pennsylvania, and two nights ago we were in Cumberland, and last night we were here. And I find this very useful because it brings up signals into that steel motorhome to a very listenable value. How well does it do it? Well, let's see, this has been changed from 1260, so.
WASP?
WASP News.
Yeah.
You can count on it. For what you need to know...
I won't make any apologies for the interference.
30 WASP News.
That's 11:30, right? I think that's what he just said. Now, if I bring this loop close to it and tune it, one of two things will happen. It'll get louder or softer.
I'm for talking about.
Where did you get that thing?
Where'd I get this thing?
Yeah.
I bought it from Haberl Company, which is one of these dumb catalogs my wife gets in the mail that I...
You go buy them?
Oh, yes. But wait. Okay, that's just one example. If the noise weren't here, and if that were a weaker station, I might be able to wow you even more. I'm nulling the radio a little bit without the loop anywhere near it. Just to give you an idea of a weaker station. How much difference it can make. It can make a sizable difference. But instead of spending your $45, I should say I sell, but I don't. I want to show you what's inside this. 26 turns of wire. It's called Formex coated coil wire. And an old tuning capacitor out of an old radio. You know, the kind of thing you find in your basement or your attic. Rip it apart, throw away everything. Where's Bill Swiger? You restore radios, do you? So throw away everything except what Swiger wants. But anyway, take out the capacitor. And on the capacitor, there are two connectors, two things that stick out. And you put one end of the coil to one, 26 turns around about a foot. I used a wastebasket for this. Then I tape it together with a sticky, wide adhesive tape. And then all you're doing is this. Except my knob just fell off, of course. Now, I'll tell you what I do. As we drive around in our motorhome... and you can laugh if you want, but of all the places in the world today, this is the one room that shouldn't laugh too loud. Every hour on the hour, we frequently stop, pull over, put on the four ways, and I go out with my seven radios and tune in different stations and tape record their IDs. This I find, when you're out in the gravel, frequently will fall over. You can't get a good footing, and it falls over. So when I built this, I put a base on it, so that the radio goes right on it. If anything, mine's slightly better than theirs. So that's all it is a capacitor and 26 turns of wire about a foot diameter. That's all.
Is the 26 turns anything? Specifically 26?
Yeah. If you make it 25 turns, you won't be able to tune down to the low end of the dial. And if you make it 30 turns, you won't be able to tune the upper frequencies.
Okay.
Yeah. So 26 is, if you make it 27, it'll probably...
It's duplicated what's in the box. It's now on the board.
That's right.
Do you make those for sale?
No, I don't.
Okay, so
maybe I should.
How soon can you start?
How soon can I start? I was at Radio Shack in the past 2 hours.
I was too.
And I, over here across the way, right? And I said, I'd like one of those. And the fellow said, I'm sorry, we sell only trimmer capacitors. And a trimmer capacitor will do the job very well. There's no power here. We aren't talking about voltage breakdown or anything. But you need a screwdriver to turn the thing. Either that or you got to weld onto this. You don't do that. So what you do is go around to the nice little old lady's attic and say, lady, I'm here to do you a favor. I'll take that old radio off your hands. See? And mug her at the same time. Why not? At flea markets, these radios are going for $10 and $15. And that's too much, I think. Maybe it isn't.
Salvation Army stores get them for $5.
Okay, fine. That's the place to go. Or garage sales. And that's another place where things typically are cheaper. At flea markets, you're apt to get a dealer, and he knows you can get $12, $15 for these radios. You know, the old Emerson radios, the kind that I grew up with. That's what we wanted to say about the small loop antenna, but perhaps you got the idea. There's no way to discriminate against one station in favor of another. It can be done, but it's so laborious. So you don't do that. The scene shifts to this loop. This loop does the same thing that loop does, only it does more of it, whatever that is. So let's try this again. I haven't tried this on WASP, but you notice that has no batteries. It's totally passive. There's just no connection to the radio. In fact, this radio has no external antenna connection. Most of my radios don't. So I'm just going to put it in the field of this loop.
And there's so much that goes on about hip formation,
okay.
You know, hip dysplasia, things like that, but whatever.
It's got quite an impact. These loops are much like a lens. They're taking the sun's rays and focusing them down on that piece of paper that you make burn. Same thing with radio waves. You focus down on the ferrite loop stick that's in these radios. No batteries, no connections, no nothing. Original warranty guarantee. Now we turn the loop. This is part of the thing we said. If everything works, we'll be amazed. If we were outside that window doing the same experiment, presumably we'd hit a null, probably a very sharp null on WASP. How far is ASP from here, would you guess? Probably. Oh, good distance, right? Yeah. So we'd draw a pretty good null on this. And the way you'd draw the null would be to aim this right at WASP. You should have a null. Now, there's another way to use a loop like this, other than what we call inductive coupling, which you've just seen. And that is to find the wires we've been making laboriously today. It turns out that if you just come off the coil of the loop, I'm telling you a half-truth at this point, but we'll refine it after we get the message across. If we simply connect the antenna terminals of a radio right across those only two existing terminals, connect that into the external connection of a radio. And Fred, for this, I think I want to use your Sony. Would you like to join me at this? We'll need the adapter.
All right.
It turns out, for your information, that the Radio Shack DX440, the external radio connection, antenna connection, does not function on the medium wave, and neither does the RF gain control, so it's subject to overloading. It has several shortcomings of that type. It's $200 marked down this week, I guess. Yours is like $300, and we're going to find out some of the differences. How about 11:30? 11:30 in New York.
There it is.
That's pretty impressive, Fred. You sure you got it connected right? Yeah, I guess you do.
That's it. Of course, you're not dialed in there, are you?
Yeah, I thought I was. Well, I'm hearing something. I was close. Now, forgive the buzz. The buzz is a function of the Holiday Inn. If we took it outdoors, we'd be all set. Now, I'm going to turn the loop some more. Oh, you have an S meter, don't you, built in?
Yeah, I was going to say, you can watch it as you tune it.
Just barely, Fred. When you get to be my age, you'll have the same problem. I'm hearing static. It's interesting, inside this steel building, the loop doesn't do much, does it, Bill? And yet, earlier today, we were looping out some stations, so we won't bother to look around.
Try turning it just so you can see how the signal will go right away.
...by making sure that little bit instead of sitting slouching over to one side or still
I'm up to about 7 is... Yeah. Okay. That pretty much tells the story that we wanted to tell you about the passive loops, the little ones that are commercially available and these that you build on your own. Bill Swiger built this, and it's a thing of beauty. KLH speaker base, you said? And this came off your private yacht, I trust. And the wire is courtesy of something else, and this is probably out of an old radio.
Now, that does not have 26 turns.
No, because the diameter... there's a lineal relationship between the diameter and the number of turns. This is 4 feet, so I'd expect it to be about a quarter of what I have over there. And a quarter of 26 is 7. Are they smiling? Are they buying this bit?
and here are seven turns. It turns out this loop with this particular capacitor, unless you switch in another capacitor, doesn't quite catch the bottom end of the dial. So it's approximately that ratio, okay? You notice also this is a square configuration. It's got spacing between the wires. All of these things matter, but not that much. You can have an awful lot of fun between 800 and 1600 on the dial with one of these. And switch in a capacitor, then you catch the bottom end of the dial.
What if you have more wires around there, would it make it?
Probably an eighth or a ninth wire would bring you down to the bottom end of the dial, but you wouldn't be able to tune with this capacitor, you wouldn't be able to tune the top end of the dial. Huh. It's a delicate balance. Mm. I'm guessing at that, Bill.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, my theory is correct. I'm guessing that an eighth turn or a ninth turn would make that much difference. Yeah. So you see there are two ways, inductively where you make no connection to the radio, and then directly into the radio if you have a radio with an external connection. Again, no batteries, nothing here at all. On the other hand, there are certain limitations. And what we're going to learn about those limitations now is from Fred Vobey, who's going to talk to us about active loops. You want to take that off?
Okay. Okay, and now we've concluded batteries not included. Let's get into batteries included. There's two different loops that you see up here. This one here was the original super loop that was put together. That one there is for a member of the National Radio Club, which I brought along here just so I could give it to him, and it was the newer version of it. Now, since that time, the loop design has been changed based upon people's conversations and, you know, what they've said that they've liked and disliked. So possibly in the near future we're going to be going to a complete different look of this thing. But for all practical purposes, a loop is a loop. And this one is based upon the theory of using a coil which is mounted around a ferrite bar. If you take a look at it from the end, you can see we have suspended inside of a dielectric tube a coil form, which is made of ferrite or crushed iron. And then the coil, which resembles the basic electrical characteristics of that one over there, there's turns up here and a small amplifier. Now, what this accomplishes is two things. First of all, you have the ability to be able to turn, to directionalize, and move it to the side, tilt it, to be able to, say, get a null out of the sky wave or ground wave or however you want to do this. There's also an amplifier inside here. The amplifier is calculated to be roughly about 26 dB of gain. You can go hotter, but the problem we found in testing these things originally was that hotter is not always better. You get to a point, especially on the Sony ICF-2010, where you're hitting this thing with so much signal that you end up just swamping the receiver and it just doesn't do anyone any good. In fact, most of the people that are running super loops with the 2010 are running the gain about half the way down. And that is so that you don't overload the front end of the receiver. Now, let me first start here. We'll put on our station we had here before. And this can't pick up a darn thing in here. Let's put on the super loop. Okay, there's our station. Then we can move it around. You can see as I tune it, it hits a certain point. In fact, I don't know if you can really see the little red LED here on the synchronous detector, but as soon as I get the carrier above a certain range, he will come on. Now, if I'm guessing right, this station should be on a bearing this way. I'm not sure if that's correct or not, not knowing the geography of this area. Now, if we're outside where we didn't have any noise, you take this and tune the station basically out. I'm just getting a lot of noise here from lightning hits and everything. The loop antenna itself is also comprised of a tuning section much like this one here. behind the box is a tunable capacitor. And this actually selects the frequency. Let's see if I can go over to 1260. It's fairly close. There's the null. Now with this type of antenna, ferrite bar, I'm not too versed on the open air coils, but on the ferrite bar, there's a station which is 4.6 miles from my location, 1,000 watts non-directional, and that can be nulled down to practically nil. Like I said, I've not tested the air coils to know exactly how they provide specifications, but you're looking at roughly about 40 to 80 dB of rejection normally on a loop antenna is what you can achieve. Now, the biggest question is that is asked about a loop is the gain. And again, the gain has very little to do with the operation of the loop. It's nice to have gain, but what happens is you tend to overload the radio or tend to put too much signals in. And even though it's a tunable device, you will get signals off to the side. For example, in my area, like I said, I have 1150, which is WIMA radio. If I'm on 1120 and tune this, even though I'm tuning for 1120, I'm still going to get what's called a skirt, the RF signal off to the sides. It's still going to catch 1150. And that signal is going to go into the receiver and cause me some problems. So you cannot always depend upon gain to create the best effect. I mean, I can crank this thing up here. Let's see here. So what's a good local station to really swamp it with?
1340, 750,
1400. Let's try 750 here. There's full all LEDs. Now you can just hear a little bit of distortion in that. If I take it out of synchronous, it cleans it up a little bit because it's not catching as much of the distortion. And still off to the side, you don't hear as much slop as you would normally. But for DX purposes, a lot of times that's very unfavorable because you'll get images all over the place. So typically we've found that keeping the gain at roughly about 20 is 20 to 26 is a good figure. The antenna itself, the most costly part of constructing a loop antenna, so that you know basically when you're buying either this type of unit or a Radio West or what have you, the most expensive part of this whole design is in chassis fabrication and then also this ferrite bar. Now, when I started designing these type of antennas, I decided that the best way to go would be to contact a ferrite manufacturer and get a custom rod made. And this one here is already dyed out with a 6/32-inch hole so that you can stack on more rods onto it, which helps a little bit in the nulling capability. But you're looking at roughly about $30 to $40 just for the rod itself, raw materials.
Fred, how does that compare to the Radio West loop?
Radio West loop,
which is what I have.
Okay. There's a couple of different pros and cons. The signal-wise, it does roughly about the same. The bandwidth of the amplifier is less than the Radio West, which means it's producing a narrower RF gap in there, where normally the Radio West will say take 1140 to 1160, and that will be a good usable range. This one is set up and tuned just for 10 kilohertz, so you're not amplifying the side frequencies on 1140 and 1160. There is two other antennas which was compared to. One was the McKay Dimec AM5, I think is what the model number is, or CCA, I think is another manufacturer that built the same type of loop. And they have a very wide RF envelope on them, and that's because mostly they're used for broadcasters who are trying to get a very clean AM signal. It's 10 kilohertz wide on either side, where this is designed just strictly for DX. It will work for, you know, listening around the house, but it's not, that's not its real true intent.
What causes that short skirt, the number of turns in the coil?
It's the RF design. There's what you call in RF designing, there's in coils it's called a Q, which is the amount of selectivity in the coil itself. And this is set up and engineered for a very narrow bandwidth, as are some others. But like I said, in the McKay-Dimex case, they're making these things for broadcast stations, and they want the AM radio to sound good. So they make it very, very wide.
Is that about 100 turns because it's much smaller than that
26-turner? This happens to be, I think it's 34 turns of a wire called Linz wire, which is actually like 38-gauge wire, which is wound around thread. And then this whole coil is made by physically just standing there and turning the thing very, very easy, because the wire just breaks like that if you give it any tug on it at all.
What about the Palomar loop?
Not tested a Palomar at all to know anything about that.
You'd be very disappointed if you get one. They're very poorly bent.
That's what I've heard.
Yes, very poor. They will not compare with the Radio West, the Space Magnet, or what little, that's mine by the way, what little bit of experience I've had with this one.
What's the Space Magnet?
That was an early shielded loop antenna that was made by a guy named Joe Wooster up in New York back in the 60s. It's no longer available as far as I know.
There are some other techniques you can use in loop of manufacturing. Several designs have been to add more ferrite bars to widen it. In testing, and let me explain how this thing was tested and what some of the applications we used. And I'll make let's see if I can get Al to shudder back here when he finds out what happened to his loop in the last month here. Things that we as DXers normally encounter are pretty much what you call operational errors in the equipment. A radio, may be able to be tuned and may tune real well, but if the knob falls off, that doesn't do you a bit of good. Some of the engineering that went into these particular models, we looked at different facets of how things were put together. One of the things is, what happens when you have a power line spike or, say, a close electrical hit from a lightning strike? So in the last 4 months, these loops have been going under test. Al's is the newest version of that. It's been fully modified. This is the original version, the first one that went out. And after they were put together, tested, made sure the gains were roughly the same and everything, we then stuck them in a plastic box, similar to a suitcase type box, with a little $14 Radio Shack receiver tuned to a semi-distant station. In my case, I was tuning to 1370 WSPD in Toledo. The loop sat outside in this heat and humidity, but protected from rain and such, and went through three thunderstorms. You might not think that's much. However, the box where the loops were in was sitting beneath a 500-foot tower. The tower was constantly getting hit by lightning at different intervals. What we found is that the amplifiers in Al's loop typically would encounter a problem somewhere along the line. The lightning hits a static discharge, or the EMF, which is generated by the lightning strike against the tower, fans out, and it will encounter the amplifier and tends to croak the amp. In his version, I was able to get a lot of that out. In the older versions, pretty much any close lightning strike would just damage the whole amplifier assembly, and it had to be replaced. The other thing, as I spoke about, was the ferrite bar. Did much testing with the thicknesses. Started out with a quarter-inch thick rod, and then went up to an experimental piece, which I don't know how I'll ever end up selling this piece, but it the element itself is 2.5 inches in diameter. Realistically, it did not make any change. The only change I was able to find that would I could actually document, and by documenting it, I'm talking about looking at actual signal levels, not just the ear, but signal levels coming out of the cable or the amplifier, and also viewing it on a spectrum analyzer to see what the products are. How well does the signal get received in comparison to other signals on the dial? Is it actually performing a useful benefit, or is it just fluff? Is it just there to make it sound good? Found out that if you lengthen the bar assembly, that will help you in nulling the signal. Now, it depends upon how serious you are. Most people could get away with just the single 12 to 14 inch bar arrangement like this, but there are some guys that do a lot of overseas DXing, as well as try to catch, you know, California from the East Coast, and the longer bar will help you dump out. Figure-wise, if anyone is familiarized with decibels, the difference was typically between 14 to 21 dB of rejection. And it was to the point where in Lima, Ohio, I've got a 940 local and an 1150 local. On the 1150, I couldn't get them out completely all the way. I'd still have traces of them, but I could hear Cuyahoga Falls, and there's another 1150 in the area. I could bring up the 1140, which is in Kendallville, and it's a very 250 watts, I think, very weak station. Could bring them up to a very listenable signal. And on 940, I can knock the 940, which I think that's 500 watts directional day, but the pattern goes right toward me. That could be knocked completely to nothing. There was no signal at all heard. Now, when that signal was gone, I could hear Detroit on 950 just fine, and then on 930 Lyria, which is mostly, you know, pretty easy catch during the daytime anyways. But going with the longer rod did help the reject capability. Did not improve the gain at all. So as far as the construction techniques, those are the two areas which you looked at. The other side of the inside of this amplifier, the other side of the design was to strip line as much as possible. Make everything as very basic so that, you know, when it's sitting there on the desk, gets knocked over backwards, you know, what's going to be the livelihood? Now, the one thing I did forget to bring that Mikey did remind me I should have is I've got a loop here that a guy bought that took a dive off a 5-foot rack cabinet. And there's one thing that we've never been able to solve, and I don't think any other manufacturer has, and that's if these things take a good hit, ferrite is very fragile, and it just shatters.
Yeah.
And there's nothing we've tried putting in, if you look carefully at the end of it, a rubber gasket, and have tried to isolate that the best we could. But still, when it takes a drop from 4 feet up onto the ground, pretty well write it off. Any questions for last?
Do you sell those?
Well, I've got 9 more chassis, which I'm going to be building of this basic design. Well, actually, of Al's design over there. Then after that, it's going to be going to a different style chassis and mount, getting rid of this wood exterior. The element will be mounted on top of the amplifier using RF plastic to hold it up, and then in the bottom of the unit will be a thread, which is for like a camera type mount. So instead of buying the wood stand and then the amplifier, you just go and get a tripod and you can screw it on. The reason I did that is the majority of the guys using them are using them in the field, and if they're using them at home, tripod is actually about the same price as it costs to have the guy make up the wood stands.
Can you request a larger rod?
Yeah. I'm negotiating with the company who, when I bought the rod material, I went right to a manufacturer and said, this is the size I need to make this thing work. And the second thing is we're looking at is instead of going with sections which are threaded together, is seeing how we can get just one big chunk of it continuous.
What's the cost?
Well, right now they're quoting me $120 for a 36-inch piece of ferrite. The option is I can go to a inch by inch piece of ferrite. It's only going to be $90, but then I have to redesign the whole outside exterior, take into consideration what that's going to do to the coil and et cetera. It's going to be a big pain. But we're right now on the negotiation standpoints with the company, and if I can talk them into selling low quantity, the problem is they would like to see 240 units manufactured right off the bat. That's a little much.
Now, the number of turns in that also is geared to the size and the
yeah.
ferrite and everything. Okay, so.
There is a loop back there, serial number 2, back in Lima, which I probably should have brought that one, where we did a whole bunch of different turns and a switch down here, which switched bands. The idea was very good, except in practical application, there's not much down into the long wave band. There's only a few DXers who really get into long wave DXing. And when you get above about 2,000 or 2 megahertz, there really doesn't seem to be any good benefit other than gain. If you're an apartment dweller and need an outside antenna, then yeah, it would work. But as far as, for example, this loop would be able to take and tune 6 megahertz. Being able to tune up on, say, Sackville, Ontario, and null out Sackville to see what the hell's there, didn't do anything. The RF is at that point, you know, shortwave stations, it's all over the place. So there really isn't any real good nulling capabilities on it. Anything else? Ernie?
I have an SM2 that's one of those space magnets. This is, when I get in one of these new Energizer batteries and put in it, these lay batteries, I find it overloads, unworkable. The old Eveready batteries, which are red colored, never did that. And now I found that the batteries you get from Radio Shack are good, even though they may not last as long. They don't overload. I'm just wondering why these new powerful batteries with the Energizer that never quits, so they say, does that.
I had no problem with mine with Energizer. I have a space magnet and they work fine. I have absolutely no overload problems with
space. I had all kinds of problems with it.
Yeah, I saw that in your music some time ago and I wondered about that.
There's an interesting thing with the batteries that we found out and I'm not sure, not being a chemist and knowing how the chemical breakdown in a battery works exactly. I had a guy that bought one of these loops and he kept complaining about static, that every so often the loop would just get like real noisy in the background. He was an air check freak and liked to record radio stations and try to get as good a quality as possible. And all of a sudden, you know, he had this problem where the loop would run for a while, get noisy. He'd send it back. Of course, I'd look at it, think, couldn't find a thing. Not thinking, I'd just stick a brand new battery into it, send it back. And it worked for a while, then it started doing it again. We found out that there is a brand of battery, and I think Mike knows the name and the model number of the battery. For some reason, when they drop below like 7 volts, they start producing noise in the amplifier. Why, I have no idea. It had something to do with just the fact they drift down. Now, on the newer version, we compensated that by that by using a different electronic network in there. And Al's loop over there will operate down to 4.2 volts at the same specification as 9-volt batteries. So it greatly improved the battery life of the radio itself. Or I should say the loop. And the biggest draw...
The battery got older.
Yeah.
It wore down a bit. It became workable. It spent some of its life.
Yeah. I'm not sure exactly how that works, but I do know there is some problem with batteries in the way they age. They can cause that effect, as well as, you know, rechargeable batteries, too. There's a problem I had with another loop where a guy was using rechargeable 9-volt batteries. And after they go down to a certain point, you try charging them back up, they develop a memory, and they never get fully charged. So it seems as you're charging them, they ever so often you get into this this point of time where it keeps shortening up the amount of time you have to charge them. There's only one way of getting rid of that. That's to drain the battery completely down to zero, recharge it up, drain it again down to zero, and recharge it up, and it removes the memory for the battery. But I don't know. Personally, I think it's just easier to go out and buy another 9-volt. Yeah. Yeah, and I'm putting in all the new ones they're going out. I'm using these Energizer Industrials, and haven't had any problem with those. So.
Do you get as much power signal into that loop as you would a long wire antenna?
Well.
What would be the comparison there? Because you can't connect. Can't connect both to the radio, right?
No.
You have to one or the other.
I looked at a version of this with two jacks on the bottom of it and having it so that when you turned the loop off, it fed an antenna, but then you had two cords. Wasn't practical. Again, you're dealing with different factors. On a 2010, as long as you can get between 3 to 7 LEDs, the radio is properly captured. The signal is properly captured on the radio. You do not need to light all of them up, and in fact, it does cause more problems. One warning found out after probing Sony very hard about how this radio is built. This radio, if anyone has a 2010, be very careful about putting long wires into this external input. The thing I found out was that when you slip the jack in, you actually take off the protection of the front end of the radio. So if you have a long wire beverage and have a static hit very close, you can blow out the front end of it very easy. Now, I fought with Sony for about 3 weeks on the phone trying to get this information because I couldn't figure out why this radio kept croaking on me every time I go over and put it on the long wire. Finally, they mentioned that, oh yeah, well, they drop out these diodes and capacitors. Thanks, guys. So, you got to watch out about that, and I then have to question how many other manufacturers, or I don't recall what the model number is in the Radio Shack version, whether or not the Radio Shack version is the same, or how many other manufactured units would do the same thing. So you have to be careful with it. And again, if you can just bring up the signal with a loop antenna to the point where you can at least get up between 3 to 7 LEDs, it's not gonna have any problem in capturing the signal, especially if you have synchronous detection. Because once you get that 3 LED lit and hit that synchronous detection, it locks right on it. Any other questions?
Do you know if the GE Super Radio 2 is such that when you connect an external antenna, it automatically disconnects the internal, and if not, would using a loop on a radio that has a ferrite bar, would they kind of work against each other?
I suspect it does not. We were testing it this morning and found when the loop was near the radio, there was actually feedback, which I think I would chalk up to the fact that this is amplifying down the cable to the radio. Somehow the cable is connected to the internal loop, and that's just re-rating it back, and you get a feedback. Move the loop away from it, problem solved. I don't know why they'd make a radio with in that configuration, but stranger things have happened. Anything else? Okay.
Thank you.